On a stone gray December morning in 2011, Nouri Kamal al-Maliki arrived at the White House for a meeting with President Barack Obama. The Iraqi prime minister had maintained his grip on power atop a government that was more an ongoing collision of ambitions than a well-oiled machine. The furious sectarian bloodletting in Baghdad that had come close to pushing the country into civil war, the belated American military surge that had tamped down the violence, the Iranian-sponsored attacks, uprisings by rival Shiite parties, the al-Qaeda bombings, Maliki had maneuvered through it all. But now, the Iraqi prime minister and the American president were about to enter uncharted waters, more than 8 years after the American invasion and occupation of Iraq. To shore up Iraq's still shaky military and maintain a modicum of stability, American diplomats had spent much of the summer pursuing an agreement that would have enabled the United States to keep several thousand American troops in the country to train Iraq's armed forces, protect its skies, and conduct joint counterterrorism operations, only to have the negotiations sputter to a halt. The collapsed talks had been a casualty of rising Iraqi nationalism, backroom machinations by Iraqi politicians, and a deep ambivalence about continued American military involvement in Iraq on the part of President Obama and his inner circle as they approached the election season at home. The result was that for the first time since the March 2003 invasion, Iraq would be without U.S. troops. The departure of the last of them was just days away. While American and Iraqi military officers nervously eyed the risks ahead, both leaders had pronounced themselves to be satisfied with the outcome. Maliki's visit to Washington, in fact, had been cast by the White House as a celebration of the new normal, a sovereign Iraq that was putatively on the path to democracy and capable of providing for itself. After a brief photo op in the Oval Office, which Obama appeared to enjoy and Maliki to endure, the two sides engaged in a closed-door discussion about the way ahead. The president urged the prime minister not to release a notorious Hezbollah militant whom the Americans had captured in Iraq and handed over to Iraq's wobbly judicial system. The question of how to respond to the violent crackdown in Syria was a point of contention, but the two leaders affirmed Iraq's plan to proceed with a multi-billion-dollar purchase of American F-16s. After the discussions were done, Maliki and Obama jointly faced the press. Maliki led Iraq's most inclusive government, Obama asserted. His country's economy was projected to grow faster than China's, and the violence that had once racked the country was at a record low. In an event that would symbolize Iraq's reemergence in the club of Middle East nations, Baghdad, for the first time in two decades, would host a summit of the Arab League in March. People throughout the region will see a new Iraq that's determining its own destiny, a country in which people from different religious sects and ethnicities can resolve their differences peacefully through the democratic process, Obama added. A new day is upon us. Within a week, Iraqi tanks were parked near the residences of the nation's leading Sunni politicians. The government's lone Sunni vice president had dodged arrest by taking refuge in Kurdistan, and American officials were working overtime to try to head off more detentions, the collapse of the cross-sectarian coalition, and perhaps even another bloody round of sectarian strife. Was this just another bump in the road? A political uproar that could be contained, if not diffused, with a few high-level phone calls from Washington? Or was it the start of a new chapter of authoritarian rule that the United States had inadvertently put into place? The United States had stormed into Iraq in 2003 with extravagant hopes but little understanding. 4 years later, it had pulled Iraq back from the precipice of civil war at enormous cost. Generals had been fired and hired. The American military had rediscovered counterinsurgency. Struggling to decipher the labyrinth of sect, religion, and tribe, American commanders and diplomats had cut deals with an assortment of politicians, clerics, militia leaders, and even insurgents. But after the loss of nearly 4,500 American troops and many more Iraqi lives, and the expenditure of more than $800 billion, just what sort of Iraq was the United States military leaving behind? In the United States' tangled involvement in the Middle East, Iraq had morphed from an expedient partner to an adversary, and finally, a titanic project to establish a democratic beachhead in Mesopotamia. Seized with the mission of containing the new theocracy in Tehran, President Ronald Reagan had seen Iraq primarily as a means of containing Iranian power, so much so that during the Iran-Iraq War, he dispatched an envoy, Donald Rumsfeld, to nurture ties with Saddam Hussein, a partnership which eventually included sharing American intelligence on Iranian military positions. Reagan's successor as president, George H.W. Bush, had expanded the policy, calculating that an Iraq weary from 8 years of war with Iran would see enough advantage in a pragmatic relationship with Washington to temper its regional ambitions.